some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's May 31st, 2011. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. And tonight my co-host is Ray Dieter from the DBA Bars. How are you, Ray?
I have no idea, Jimmy. I'm confused. It's been a long weekend. We had the Memorial Day weekend celebrations, and I'm very, very confused.
Did you have any weekend sales on the Hudson or anything?
I did, yes. Yeah, the DBA sales are in full flight. We had a great time. Went out on the Hudson on the... on the lovely Ventura sailboat, and if any listeners are in the New York City area, would love to have you join us on the boat. It's a $50 sail, and you get all the good beer you can drink, and wine and champagne.
It sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Let's give a shout-out to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. You can check them out for your Beer Cloud mobile app and take any of the great beer tests to challenge your beer IQs. Check out GreatBrewers.com. We're also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of New York City beer bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. GoodBeerSeal.com. And coming June 14th, the next round of Good Beer Seal Awards, if you come to Barcade in Brooklyn, June 14th, you can find out who the new Good Beer Seal bars are.
That's going to be a great party. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be pretty cool.
And there's I think, as many as seven new beer bars in New York City that are going to be inducted.
Right. I'm looking forward to that.
So I don't know, but I've heard. So.
Yeah.
We got some special guests here tonight. There's a new cool place in New Haven, Connecticut. It's called Cask Republic. It's a really great, I would say it's a gastropub, beer bar, restaurant. We've got the owner, Christian Burns, here. How are you, Christian?
Doing well. Very excited to be here and talk with you guys today.
And you also brought along who? You got Matt Bacco, the manager, and Andrew Honig, the beverage director.
Good to meet you guys.
All right. So, Christian, tell us a little bit about your place. Is it, I said, gastropub, beer bar, restaurant?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could come under the terminology of gastropub. You know, we're referring to ourselves as an American tavern. One of the main focuses of tavern / restaurant is the 54 beers on tap. And we're currently pouring one cask conditioned ale and approximately 80, 85 bottles that we're serving.
Now, what's the name of the place?
The Cask Republic.
The Cask Republic with only one cask?
It's only got one cask, but the theory behind the name also is, you know, with the extremely large selection of bourbons, whiskeys, scotches.
That's right. They're all aged in casks.
Yeah, and not to mention all the beers that we're pouring are aged in casks at the moment too.
Sure.
You know the bourbon aged barrels, Pinot Noir aging.
Yeah, I saw your guys' menu. I saw the menus goes on forever. It's like War and Peace of menus.
Yeah, these guys are responsible for the War and Peace.
So, right? Christian, let's find a little bit about you. You actually remind me of the guy that founded Ginger Man. It's got the same kind of look. And the thing is, I don't even know his name. Who is that guy?
Bob Precious.
Yeah, you can't see him, but Christian's a good-looking guy. You know, he looks like he could move in circles from Texas to Connecticut.
Yeah, you know, I did start out with the Ginger Man back in 89. So, you know, gosh, you know, it's
wow, you're old.
89.
23 years, I think.
Yeah.
Nobody's counting, don't worry.
Yeah. He's that old.
But started out down in Texas, you know, revolved from Houston over to Dallas, then up to Austin, then up to New York. Back to Austin, back up to New York.
There are Ginger Man bars in all those towns?
Yes.
Really? I thought it was like Austin, then New York.
Yeah, no. The concept itself was originally started back in probably somewhere around 85 down in Houston, Rice University area.
That's right around like when Prohibition ended, right?
Not down there. It was going pretty crazy down there at the time.
Texas.
So you're a real longtime beer guy.
Yeah, you know, it's been an interesting ride because, you know, I say to these guys sometimes, you know, back in 1989, you know, the craft beer was pretty big. You know, the big thing out there at the time was, you know, Anchor. Mm. And, you know, we were drinking beers like Old Foghorn.
I was 12, so I wasn't in the business yet.
And, you know, that whole craft beer thing hadn't exploded yet. Mm-hmm. And so we were being exposed to things like, you know, the Polliners, the Spatens, and, you know, Schneider Weisses. And
all that stuff is available in Texas? Because then you guys have really archaic laws down there. You used to have them. Because it was you had a thing called malt liquor, right, that wasn't a beer. And it had nothing to do with what was actually made. It had to do with the alcohol content. And you had different licenses for different kinds of things. And how did that work?
You know, I think a lot of that at that time had already been relaxed because we were getting beers and, like, you know, we were getting things in, like, Sammy Kloss, which was up at 20%.
Right.
And it just had to be labeled as malt liquor. Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, that law has even evolved more over time.
Well, I mean, no place else has a malt liquor law. I mean, that's a Texas thing, basically.
Yeah.
And what do you think? I mean, let's take it back to the roots. So, I mean, what do you think of the beer scene in Texas?
Now. You know, I got to be completely honest with you. It's I don't know much about it anymore. You know, it's been
good for you.
It's been a long time since I've been down to Texas, actually. So
cool. So you started out with Ginger Man, and now you're also involved with the Ginger Mans in Connecticut.
So what happened is at a certain point there was a restaurant that was kind of built in Greenwich, and that restaurant didn't work out, and now the Ginger Man was opened in that space. And shortly after the Ginger Man opened, about maybe a year or two after that, I went into an ownership role there and eventually wound up buying out the company in Connecticut. So Bob stayed in New York, I stayed in Connecticut, and in the meantime, we had built another location in Norwalk, Connecticut, in South Norwalk. And then eventually, like I said, somewhere around 3 years ago, I had purchased, you know, all the rights of the companies in Connecticut, and he stayed in New York. And then about probably a year and a half after that, went up to New Haven and opened up the Cask Republic. Same theme, as I said, you know, with all the beers, and it's been a great ride since.
How long have you been open at the Cask Republic?
Cask opened back on January 7th, so it's a new baby.
Wow, and a good reception up there?
It's been a great reception up there, and you know, there's a definitive collegiate crowd up there, you know, with Yale and what's the other school that we have? Southern
Connecticut, I guess.
Yeah. That's been a tremendous reception because it's really been a pleasure. There's a great beer community up there.
You know, New Haven is not just a good beer community. There's a great food community there, too. Isn't that the original hamburger?
Yeah, Louis Lunch.
Louis Lunch.
Yep.
Wow. Crown Street, right up the
and
block.
That's across the street from that brew pub. What's it called?
Bar, Brew Room.
Yeah, right, where they have that great Cask Festival every year in January.
I think
that's right.
I'm
Jeff
due
Browning.
For a trip to New Haven, so I'm going to check out
we gotta do
Louis Lunch, yep. Cask Republic. What about pizza?
Pizza in New Haven?
Wow.
I never heard of that.
That's this place called Pepe's.
Yeah. Well, you got Pepe's, you got Modern.
Right.
I was going to say, Pepe, it's from what I hear, it's either a Modern or Pepe's thing. It's one or the other, neither, not both. I've never had.
Oh, really?
It's the guy's Frank Pepe, I mean, right, or something? Frank the original Pepe, Frank Pepe. Yeah.
Is there a bit of a tiff between these two establishments?
I don't. Not that I know of, so much as it's more of a tiff between the customers. It's like
right.
They're
okay.
Strict. They're one or the other. I don't
see.
Think the stores don't really care.
It's like the Philly cheesesteak thing, and it's like the hot dogs in Chicago. There's always
right,
like this
right,
local kind of loyalty issue going on, right?
It keeps the conversation.
What about in these places like these? Pepe's, Modern, these pizza places, Louis Lunch. What kind of beers do they serve? Do they serve beer?
They are,
crickets.
Well, Louis, I've only heard about Louis Lunch. I've never been to Louis Lunch. All I know is don't ask for ketchup and just take the burgers I give it to and eat it and smile.
Bring your own ketchup.
I've been up to Pepe's.
I've never been to Pepe's in New Haven. They have another one in Fairfield that it's like beer, wine, and pizza. That's it. And I'm too busy eating the pizza to really notice that they didn't have much in the beer.
And you can't put ketchup on the pizza?
Yeah.
So you're in New Haven. Do you guys feel like you're really a step above everybody else up there? You really feel like it's a good community of restaurants and bars, and there's other places you can recommend.
The town is a step above a lot of other towns and cities, or the city is a step
careful
above in terms of the. Well, listen, we're in Connecticut. Okay,
in Connecticut.
Everything
different market, different
entirely
people.
Different thing.
You guys brought some beer, didn't you?
We did.
Yes. We'll talk about it later, but there's a couple, we're touching on some points, but we're trying to talk about you guys, Cask Republic, your backgrounds, and we'll get a chance to talk to both of you About you know how you got into the business, but you know New Haven's an interesting place. I mean,
yeah,
we've heard about it, and you know, last time I was there, I went to like the British Museum, I think at Yale. It's a pretty interesting place. And we're always when we have guests on, we're always trying to put together what would a good day trip be, you know. And so we'll talk more about that. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys are pretty neat. We got Christian here, the owner. So Matt Bacco's manager. And Andrew Honig, the beverage director. So, Andrew, how did you get involved in this beverage director? That's kind of becoming a glamorous position. Does that mean is that
don't I look glamorous?
Would you be a sommelier, a cicerone?
Cicerone in the future, yes. The training is imminent, but I kind of fell into the restaurant business by taking some time off from school, like everybody does, and kind of fell in love with the business. Went back to school, got a degree, and after getting my degree, got into the restaurant business. Found a really nice place to work that had 15 drafts, 45 bottles, and just kind of found a love for it. Got lucky that the Gingerman in Norwalk opened up around the corner. You know, 6-8 months later, wiggled my way in, got an interview, got the job, and just again got dumb lucky that the beer manager at the time decided to leave the company, and I just kind of swooped in for the kill. And you know, that's now almost 4 years later. I've just been lucky enough to work with Christian on.
So you and Christian have been working together a while.
Yeah, about 4 years.
And he sees talent in you.
Or an alcoholic.
So what does it take to be a beverage director? I know there are skills, but I mean, first of all, number one.
You can train skills, and you can train, you know, beer. It's more of a love for beer, and I think that's something we all talked about, is that we all love our job. We all love beer and learning about new beers and responsibly drinking beers, tasting things we haven't had before, and new experiences with beer. So that's what it's going to take to kind of like blow our company up a little bit more. So
what's a good beer that you like? Did you bring one for us?
We brought three.
Oh, yeah?
I'm very thirsty.
So let's get a couple of beers.
What is this beer? Southampton?
Southampton.
I've heard of those guys.
You're probably familiar with it.
Southampton.
And you brought your own glassware. That's the first time guests have brought... Jimmy, this is a first.
You know, the Cass Republic, it sounds deceptive. You'd think it might just be, you know, like a pub with a lot of casts on the wall, but... It looks like a pretty classy place. You guys have a really nice menu.
These are like Rydell Crystal wine glasses that we're drinking this beer out of.
Substitute.
Salute. This is a nice beer. This is Southampton Grand Cru, which is a really nice beer. Do you want to tell us about the beer, Andrew?
It's pretty simple. A Belgian strong pale.
It's a current year?
2007.
No, no. This 2007. Okay. Sitting We've been holding this in our cellar for a few years for the right occasion.
I can tell by the nose that
it's been really rich.
And that I think that was unintentional. I don't think we knew what we had with a lot of these beers.
Yeah, well, when a couple we first years got ago. To
the bar. Oh, no, you brought the good stuff. Oh, shit.
No.
When we first showed up at the bar, we were tasting things like Flemish beers and spitting them out. They
Which
were
bar
disgusting.
Is that?
At Gingerman.
Gingerman,
when we
4 years
when
ago.
We, you know,
The one on 36th Street?
No. South Norwalk.
The Norwalk Gingerman.
All right.
I mean, we opened... In 2007, Andrew was there a little earlier than I was, but we didn't know what happened. These beers were.
You're saying that the beers were good and in stock there, but you just didn't appreciate them.
Yep.
Yeah,
it wasn't like they were over the hill or anything.
First time I tried to rodent bock, I was like,
there's a tasting curve. There's definitely a tasting curve, especially with these, you know, with things like Cantillon and things like you know these sour beers, especially.
This is my nose just told me it was an aged beer.
Oh, but Phil Markowski, the brewer of this beer, would love to taste this.
He would.
I wonder if he even has a beer this old.
We're getting
the signal from the booth. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk more with the guys from Cask Republic. We'll be back in a moment on Beer Sessions Radio.
Do what you wanna do now. I can tell you who following this public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Join Linda Palacio for A Taste of the Past every Thursday at 12 p.m. as she indulges her curiosities about food, cooking, drinking, and dining of the past by taking a journey through culinary history. Linda interviews authors, scholars, friends, and chroniclers to learn about what was eaten, where, and how, from as long ago as ancient Mesopotamia and Rome, right up to the grazing tables and deli counters of today. The show underscores food as a lively link between present and past cultures. Again, that's Thursday at 12 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. That is a great show, Linda Palacio show on Thursday. Heritage Radio Network, one of over 20 really great shows about food, beer, and other things. We just got a little question. My friend Mike Lavulo from Union Beer texted me, and he gave us a quiz because these guys know some of the people at the Ginger Man in Manhattan. There's a woman there named Annie who's a very popular bartender. She also goes by the name Annie Likes Beer. If anyone knows her last name or if she's listening, she can call us at 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. And what is Annie Likes Beer's real last name?
What do they get for the right answer?
They get to be on the radio, bro. Come on.
Okay. Trip to San Diego, maybe? I don't know.
And, you know, we're going to give a little credit to this network, Heritage Radio Network. You know, we know we've had some, we have some friends out in Michigan. We got a guy who sent us some pottery. We had a visitor a couple weeks ago, Jimmy's number 43 from Michigan, who listens to us. We know we have fans in Florida. And a gentleman from the UK sent in a rather foul message addressed to Ray. And what did he say, Ray?
He said that he was really happy that we're drinking beer. Actually, what he said was that in America we have beer month and we have beer week, but in England they have beer year. It's beer year all the time.
And he said, we have beer year all year. F you, Ray. Like,
how come
like
they can't get the diacetyl thing under control?
Yeah. But of course it was a friend. But anyways, here we are. So we've been talking to the guys from Cash Republic in New Haven. And Matt Backo, the manager, he's tasting us on some cheese. What is the cheese, Matt? This is pretty awesome.
The first cheese we had with the Grand Cru was Ardrahan. It's a cheese from Ireland. It's a pasteurized cow milk. We get all our cheeses from nice gentleman down in Darien, Connecticut. Ken, Andrew's going to remember his last name.
Scovran.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That would be up in Darien right now.
Up in Darien, excuse me. Ken has been doing cheese for 35 years, and he's just, he lights up when you come in. You bring him a beer, he gives you cheeses.
He lights up.
By lights
fires
up, he turns bright
he
red.
Too. He does bright turn red. Bright red, yeah.
I'll have some more. This is really good.
That was really lovely, yeah.
So what kind of food do you guys do? There. I mean, I saw the menu. You have like some scallops and things, but
we do some really nice American fare. One of the things I think gets left out a lot in our food is that it's all fresh food. Everything is made every day. They're packing the burgers every day. We're getting meat twice a week, brought up from New York. Nice little Italian guy, Mike Petraglia, brings that up to us. So all of our food is fresh. All of it's prepped and made every day. There's nothing coming out of a freezer and going into a fryer. That's something we're really proud of up there.
So, the next time I'm up there, is it off the train line? Can you take a train straight up there from New York City?
You can take a train up there. We're right. New Haven's the terminus of.
New Haven, of course. Yeah, I had a really bad train experience in New Haven.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I went up there for that Cask Ale Festival at the brew house. Yeah, and I was told by a friend of mine, Dan Shelton, that the trains run all night long.
That's false.
What's the name of that place, right? It's the Brew...
What's it called?
Brew Room.
B-R-U. Right, and they do a Cask Ale Festival every January.
So there are some other real beer-centric places up there.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
What are some of the other ones?
You have Delaney's, which is about 10 minutes out of Maine, downtown New Haven, and then right around the corner from us is a place called Prime 16. And both those places are doing great things with beer as well. Mm-hmm.
And do you think, is the trend to have, like, you know, 20 taps, 50 taps, 10 taps? What do you see going on?
Prime's rocking, I think, 20, 25 right now. Yeah, Delaney's has 52. I think they just did an upgrade. Probably has nothing to do with the fact that we came in with 53, but they just added about
so it's
six
a race.
Taps,
it's not a competition,
yeah.
Kid.
Yeah, this is fun, man.
Connecticut beer. I love this story.
Who has the most
taps in Connecticut?
It's got to be Delaney's right now.
More than you.
But you know, guys, size doesn't matter.
One spot, yeah.
Size doesn't matter when it comes
quality.
to Quality, absolutely.
But how can you guys manage so many taps? I mean, I have 12. I think that's a lot. We've talked about going.
I have 16.
How can you do more than that? You know, always keeping the beer fresh, making sure things move, not getting stuck with some, you know, duds.
It's really tempting to put on all the beers that we want to drink all the time up there, but they don't always sell like that. This is not to say that something like Dale's Pale Ale is a poor example of a craft
beer. Why are you singling out Dale's Pale Ale? That's a great beer.
It's a fantastic beer, and so that's a beer, for example, that moves a lot. It's one of those beers that you might not drink every day because you can have it every day. You might say, oh, you know, what's a crazy beer from Italy or somewhere else?
You don't really get that. What are some of the other beers that you guys move a lot? Because you're totally in a different market, different distributors.
We are absolutely slaying the double IPA up there. Something about Imperial IPAs people love in New Haven. We sell a ton of Southampton 2X. We sell
a ton of great beer.
Fantastic.
Okay, so you know what's the best beer you had this weekend?
Good question.
Memorial Day weekend just passed, and we were all drinking beer. We know that.
Yeah.
What was your favorite? Let's go around the room and we do this now and again. What was your favorite beer this weekend?
I know Dogfish has had a lot of hype lately, but this was the first time I had the Sati.
Sam's a good
draft.
Friend, so
Sam is an awesome dude.
Cool.
Been to the Ginger Man. Was at the Ginger Man a few months ago.
Pick your
Sati.
Beer.
We put on Sati.
Oh, okay.
On draft, and I think that was a really, really tremendous and really interesting beer, and it's a creative beer. I enjoyed that. That was my pick from the weekend.
I had
Andrew,
a little barbecue at my parents' house. I had Cisco Lady of the Woods, which is a wit that they aged in a used Chardonnay barrel for no less than 8 months. Had a little bit of like tartness, a little acidity, really effervescent, but as soon as it cleared out of your mouth, you can get like a nice smooth vanilla oak
Cisco.
Flavor. Cisco,
amazing.
Nantucket.
Christian, what about you?
You know, usually I'm, you know, a slave to go into the IPAs right away, but yesterday I was sitting out on this patio on the river at this restaurant eating tacos, and they had Oscar Blues, Mama's Little Yellow Pills in the can, and they were just going down beautifully. It was hot outside. It was great. It was great to drink a really good beer in hot weather and not, you know, something that was kind of, you know, a little bit watery. And so
watery?
Well, you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
What about you, Ray? Was it whiskey or was it beer?
Well, you know, I'm an equal opportunity researcher. But my favorite beer this weekend was the Mad River Imperial Red Ale, which was fantastic. But you know what? I was on that sailboat this weekend. We were drinking the Little Yellow Pills.
Yeah,
which was amazing.
Oh.
In cans.
Can I put mine
in
too?
Jimmy, what was your favorite beer this weekend?
I'm a big fan of the guys out in North Fork, east end of Long Island, Greenport Harbor.
Greenport.
And
with their IPA
I was out on Governor's Island this weekend. We were drinking Hop Nami IPA.
Whoa.
Which was, even though it was a stronger IPA, it was pretty refreshing too. That was a good question. I love talking about what people drink on the weekend. And I love when Ray drinks beer instead of whiskey.
So
what beer, you know what? Do you know that beer is good for you? We'll go to this one. Beer is good for you in a way that liquor isn't. And I think that science will prove that. And we can only hope that more scientists study that.
So our next question is, Jimmy, I'm going to start with you.
All right.
What was your breakfast beer this morning? What did you have with your cornflakes?
The first beer of the day for me was the Defiant Muddy Creek. It's like a tinted dark lager.
Lovely.
Which I think is a style. Let's talk about this. Okay. What style of beer do you think is going to be big in the next year? I'm going to say it's like a German-style dark lager. Whether it's, you know, I've had Sly Fox. They have really nice dark lager.
Dark lager is good. I think Pilsner. I think Pilsner is going to be the next big star.
You think going back to Pilsner?
Uh-huh.
There's been a big... We had a kind of a moment last year where we got really turned
affair.
On to lagers. We just had a love affair.
When we opened up Norwalk 4 years ago and had 52 on the wall, it was your token few lagers and pilsners just because they had to be there. And we were just IPA, hops, hops, hops. And then like it got cold and it was stouts, porters, everything big and burly. And then all of a sudden, like a summer or two ago, it was like, wait a minute, hold on a minute. This is actually a style of beer that, you know, maybe gets kind of crapped on every once in a while, but there are really good craft-made lagers and pilsners out there. And,
really good.
And, like, the whole category of lagers, top to bottom, have really kind of opened up in the past, 12, 18 months or so, to the point where we've taken off those, you know, big conglomerate light lagers and put on craft lagers, and people don't flinch.
You know,
as soon as we say, sorry, we don't have XYZ or XYZ light on draft, but we've got Cisco Sankaty Light Lager or New England Elm City Lager, or Mama's Little Yellow Pills, people are like, all right, we'll give it a shot.
You know, we've had this conversation a number of times on the radio show. the subtlety of a good Pilsner or a good lager is, I think, being more and more appreciated by the beer drinkers. We went through this intense, you know, double IPA, imperial this, imperial that. And now it's like, yeah, it's, and especially in the summertime, it's you pull back and it's like a good Pilsner. In fact, we're doing a Pilsner tasting at Liquids of Interest on Monday at DBA, coincidentally.
What's that? Just going to be a straight up Pilsner tasting?
I'm going to choose five Pilsners. I'll do a couple of German ones, a couple of domestic ones, and maybe one in a can, just to do it. You know, we did.
Elm City.
Pardon me?
Which New one? England Elm City Lager.
German Pilsner.
I've not had
can.
That.
In a can. Yeah, New Haven, Connecticut. Ones. Woodbridge.
Wow.
You know, I love this trend towards canned good beer.
Craft
beer in cans. I think it's great. And a lot of people are pushing back against it. They don't want to do it. They think it's, you know, they're thinking of their daddy's PBR and their old Milwaukee's in cans. And it's just not that way.
I don't know. When we had New England Brewing beer dinner at the Ginger Man in Norwalk last year, we started the first course. Everyone got a can of Elm City Lager on the table. And it was like, 1, 2, 3, everyone crack your cans. And everyone's like, why are you doing this? And Matt Westfall and Rob Leonard from the brewery got up and talked about, why are we showcasing a can? What are we doing with cans? And talked about how it's better for the beer.
Right. It's, no light.
Exactly.
No light. And, no exposure to the light.
And you can hide faults in a beer when it's big and burly and dark. But when you make a light, clean, crisp beer, there's so much more opportunity for fault to be seen.
Matt, what's the next beer that you're opening?
Speaking of New England Brewing, we have their Imperial Stout Trooper. This is a pretty sought-after beer.
And we're talking about Pilsners and about, you know, session beers, and now we're getting like a 24% stout.
Imperial Stout. So, yeah, we're in New York, and it's funny. Like, we're down here, and we see beers coming up from all over the country. But we still don't see there's so many regional beers from, you know, all around the country. I think sometimes in New York we probably see more imports than we do, you know, American craft beer.
You know, when I first stood up with Jimmy at DBA, we kind of stood away from a lot of New York breweries because we weren't that thrilled with their beer. But it's changed dramatically over the years. There's so much great New York beer.
Hear the sound of
there.
A good glass clinking?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the Riedel Crystal.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
So this is a little over 9%, depends who you ask. They brew this with 7 malts. It's an imperial stout, Russian imperial stout, I think is where it falls.
Yeah.
And this is a special thing they'll do once a year. They had a little interesting letter from George Lucas's folks for the label of their bottle, which features the Stormtrooper helmet. And so
George Lucas, the director?
The yes. director.
Lucas they actually limited.
Cease and desist order.
How do they find out about it?
The beer. I mean, this is a credit to a small Connecticut brewery.
That's crazy,
right? This is a credit to a 15 barrel brew house that got enough notoriety that George Lucas Entertainment sent them a letter saying you can't use our idea on your label.
And that's so cool.
This little mustache face over it right
or
now.
Or maybe they're awful. Just really mean badass lawyers.
Maybe they should put the letter on.
Maybe they should let
badass lawyers.
Maybe they should let them use that label. For fun, but I don't think so.
Put the letter on the label.
That's right. Yeah, not for kids. Right,
I think that's the way to go.
Not for kids, guys.
Yeah, right up on
it. All right, man. This is awesome. Matt, how did you get into this? I mean, you know, you're a cool guy. You seem like a...
He was a cool customer.
You've been around the world, or where are you from?
Were you deputized?
Andrew fell in love with the beer at Ginger Man. I fell in love with the bartender, and that's how I ended up working
He's
at
not
the
kidding.
Store.
He's not kidding.
Well, that's how I ended up working at the store. I was a barback.
So it's like a family business. You guys start working there, buddies with Christian, and... Takes the best guys and opens the best place.
Well, kind of moved through the.
This guy was not just a bar back. It was like the Tasmanian devil behind the bar. it was amazing to watch.
We know the guys like that. That he's a superstar in his own right. So you're saying is you just had him and no one else and just the bartender and you guys would do more business than ever. Right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
I mean, you know, when Matt got a start back there and, you know, when Andrew's back there and as we mentioned before, the whole thing of when they were mentioning, you know, they had never tasted Flemish ales and we had these things in the house and we knew about them and we were exposing them to these new beers and so forth and these guys just took a stronghold on them and just, you know, went for it and, you know, the rest is history at this point. These guys are, you know... You know, their knowledge at this
point. So you just sat back and you just count the money now, right?
No, but he pays us to count the money. He just sits back.
It's a good thing that Christian saying.
Cracks the whip every now and then.
Guys, there's no money here. Come on.
There's no money. That's true.
Let's be serious.
But this is interesting. So, Christian, at that time, you knew those beers and you wanted to expose your young staff to it. Is that that's what you're
Yeah, doing? No, that is true. You know, when we were doing a lot of work with them and, you know, continually educating everybody, and it was, I don't know, it was just such a nice surprise to have, you know, two, three, or four, or five people in the company really, really take it and take it to the next level like these guys did. You know, we got some other people in the company that have done that as well, but these guys are definitely the ones that have taken the highest.
All right. Right.
So, you know, so there I was in New Haven, Connecticut, going to this real ale festival, and I was told that the trains run all night long back to New York, and I got to the train station at about 10 after midnight, and there were no more trains.
So that's right. Who did you shack up with?
Nobody.
What did you have to do?
I went out, and there was a cab driver, and I said, take me to a hotel. I'm going to sleep and go home tomorrow morning. And he said, the hotels are very expensive in New Haven. Is that true?
That is, that's you know, I would say that's true. Yeah, they're you know, most of the hotels that are right in town are you know, higher end hotels.
Right by the train station, especially. You know, because the hotels at train stations areas are usually like the best hotels. Anyway, so the guy said, look, man, it'll cost you $300 a night to stay in a hotel, and I'll drive you back to New York City for a buck and a half.
Wow.
Yeah, so I said, drive on.
Sounds like you missed an opportunity, Ray. Okay. We're going to take another short break. We'll be back talking more with the guys from Cask. What is it, guys?
Cask Republic.
Cask Republic in New Haven, Connecticut on Beer Sessions
Cask
Radio.
Works fine.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today's podcast is brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a comprehensive website aimed at bringing the beer community together. At GreatBrewers.com, it's all about the beers. All right, we're here with the guys from Cask Republic, having a really nice little session. Matt, what cheese are we eating?
This second cheese that we've got here is called Wildspitz. It's a raw cow and goat milk cheese.
And this is from your buddy. Where's your buddy's shop?
Darien Cheese Shop, Darien, Connecticut.
Up there.
So you go up to Connecticut, Darien Cheese Shop. There's some good stuff. And the cheese is actually stealing the show tonight. Yeah. And we had this other local beer. We had what? What's this beer? Imperial Stormtrooper. Where is that from?
Imperial Stormtrooper from New England Brewing in Woodbridge.
That is another really nice beer. And we're having a great time. I think that you guys have to go up to New Haven, check out Cask Republic, some of the restaurants up there. Definitely worth a day trip from anywhere in the Northeast. We got a great email question. The lead-in is going to be, at Cask Republic, they have an awesome keg storage system and serving system. I don't know, is there another word for it? The one issue that comes up a lot when you have a good beer bar is that you have different beers from different countries and different traditions. They're served at different temperatures and often different pressure on the draft lines, and not every bar is set up for that. So who on your team wants to address that and how you guys set up your
draft system? I think I'll go with that one.
Draft system.
I guess I'm due the cellaring. the keg room up in New Haven is currently pouring the 54 draft lines. But five of those lines are coming out at a higher temperature. Those beers are pouring approximately between 52 and 54 degrees. They're actually on the same tap tower as 23 of the other. There's a total of 23 lines on there, and five of them are pouring at this higher temperature. So it was a custom box that we had built.
So they're in separate trunks then?
Yes, those five lines, that's its own trunk line, yeah.
Right, so the beer is like wrapped around a glycol hose, basically, right?
Correct.
And so there's two separate glycol trunks that are at different temperatures.
Yeah, we have...
That's amazing.
That six-line tap where we just didn't use one of the lines has its own glycol power pack. So we, put that up at the temperature that we want it at. And then when we, wired up the inside of that custom tower...
It's amazing the way they actually braid the beer lines around that glycol thing. It's actually an art. It's you make bracelets out of leather braids and stuff. But
do you guys have a great job. Is there a specialist in New Haven that does your draft lines, or there's a couple different guys, or you do it in house?
There's some of it that we do in house. We do have a company that we work with that does some of that line work for us as well. Drinks Unlimited out of Norwalk, Connecticut. DUI is there.
You guys are really Norwalk.
There's a little irony there.
And then in your keg room, this is like more like technical stuff, guys. But in the keg room, is there one keg room all at the same temperature?
We do. There's one keg room. There is a separate keg room that has 10 beers in it for this tower that we have kind of slipped underneath the bar. But the main keg room is pouring 44 of the beers. The interesting thing about this keg room, too, it is running at one temperature. And like I said, we have the other power pack supplying the higher temp lines. But the whole front of this walk-in cooler is all glass as well, so it's exposed to the dining room.
So I know in the Ginger Man bars, the cooler's behind the taps.
Right.
You walk in, there's like a wall of taps. When you walk in the bar, it's really, really impressive. And behind that is where the cooler is and the beer barrels are located. Is it the same way?
Our setups in Connecticut are a little bit different because we didn't have the ability to put the cooler behind the bar because we were dealing with an exterior wall.
Uh-huh.
So in Norwalk... the cooler's actually down in the basement, and then we, trunk line the beer up top, and there's like maybe a 2.5-foot pathway behind the bar where the lines shoot up and then go through the wall.
So, and your cask ale, how's that handled? Do you have a cask thing downstairs, or is it just sitting on the bar?
We put the casks directly behind the bar in one refrigeration unit, and then we can also fit our pin cask in there, and then generally the pin cask or the gravity cask will take out from there and then sit up on top of the bar.
Gotcha.
All right. Well, then you also have you feature vintage beers as well.
Yes, and that's that in new in Norwalk we were doing that as well, and we had really gotten a big inventory of vintage beers. And we created a vintage room in the basement because Norwalk is in an old bank. And we had an old safety deposit room, which was essentially a safe room.
An old bank?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, it's a 100-year-old bank.
Oh, wow. And so there's a vault.
Yes. There's
the original door is there.
And that's where the cooler is.
That's where this vintage room is.
So the vintage room.
We put a wine cooling unit in this reinforced room with these, it's like a foot and a half thick brick walls. With the steel ceiling and steel floor and these really old doors from the late 1800s that there's actually signatures on the back of the doors from people that had signed them in the late 1800s.
So are they still down there, or did you bring them upstairs to be as a showpiece for the place?
Well, that's in Norwalk. So when we decided to do the New Haven bar, we had this... From the bar that we purchased before, there was the stage at the back of the space, and we don't do a lot of live entertainment. And I said, look at this, let's put the vintage room out in the middle of the, right in the dining room. So we built this.
That's a great idea.
That's
in fact, I know a couple of people who had restaurants that closed because they didn't do things like that. You're on to something.
Any names that you want to throw out there?
I can't say that, but there's nothing like seeing, a collection of beer or wine, and that's kind of like old school. You go out for hospitality, you go out to see things that you don't usually do in your home. I'm sure in Connecticut, there's a lot of people that go to where do they buy beer? Is there a store? Is there a name for it? Like a package store? What is it? Or a liquor store? What's the name of a store you can buy beer?
Well, it's not like Pennsylvania where it's like wine and spirits shop. It's not like a state-owned shop. It's privately owned. So there's one right over the bridge in East Norwalk from us in Sono called 99 Bottles.
But what are they called? It's a beer store? Is it a liquor store?
It's a package store.
Package store. Can they sell everything?
Yes.
Liquor, wine, and beer?
Yes, they can have all of them in there.
And what about, can you buy beer at a deli or a supermarket?
There are some bodegas that I've been into that do have, six packs, 20 packs, or 30 packs, excuse me, but nothing hard.
I know when I'm in the city, I don't have to worry about things like driving and drinking. But I'm in Connecticut, I fear a lot of people probably go to a nice package store,
buy
their wine and beer, and they have parties at home.
past couple of years, you can start buying bottled beer in supermarkets, and that's kind of new to us and fancy. But otherwise, no. Like, everyone who's going to go get a nice bottle of beer, like the ones we brought with us or the ones we serve at the restaurant, people ask us, where can we get this on our own? And in New Haven, it's like right next door. You can go to the Wine Thief, which is a nice high-end wine and beer bottle shop that has some, you know, really great beers on hand. That's a lot of stuff that we serve at the bar, so they can go in there and get a couple take home as well. So,
do you guys own that place too?
No.
That's a shame. That was my idea.
They won't let us do that.
I wanted to open up a beer store next to my bar, so like for packaged goods and things to take out, but it never worked out.
It's been a really great relationship that we've had with the Wine Thief next door, though.
I bet.
They've been honest enough to say to us, wow, our beer sales have rocketed.
Of course they have. You know, there's a deli next to us on First Avenue in Manhattan, and I approached them years ago saying, look, we sell these beers. I can give you a list of things that people want to take home with them, and I'll send them over there, and I'll still pay for my sandwiches that I buy from you every day. And they just were not interested. And the place is still there. It's a great place. They have great sandwiches, but they don't have good beer. And it's like, you're next to DBA in the East Village. You should sell good beer. And they just don't get it.
They should come hang out with us on the radio show. Because
you know what? We'll bring them good
beer. What's the last beer you poured, Matt? Is this a Peniel?
Peniel.
I knew from the taste.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Peniel, what is it? A fine Italian sour red.
This is an Italian sour red. It's a Belgian style of Flemish sour, Flemish red.
And it costs like
2007, though, is this particular bottle.
Really? 27?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And it's aged for 90 days in Bordeaux barrels. So it spends about a month in the stainless maturation tanks. Then it goes into a barrel. And then it spends a little re-fermentation in the bottle.
And so, these came from your vintage room?
This came from the vintage room.
So you guys have this is an amazing program, the vintage beer. I'm going to let our listener here ask a question. We got L. Peters.
Jimmy, real quick, we've got a caller who's calling in with a Memorial Day beer. A little delayed, but they want to see what you think. So they're on the line.
All right, go for it. Hi, who is this?
Jimmy, it's Carmen.
Hi there, how are you?
Good, good. I'm not much of a beer drinker, but I drank... I'm going to try to pronounce it, and I'll probably pronounce it wrong. Greiskirchner Weisse, Weisse, Austrian premium beer. And I liked it. Just wanted to know what you thought about it.
Wow, I never heard of it. Is anyone in the room?
Not familiar with it.
Why don't you spell it out to us? Cause...
Sure. Greiskirchner.
Greisnerker.
Not available in Connecticut.
And it's a Weiss beer.
Austria. And where did you get this beer?
Anyway, it was really good with spicy Italian sausage. That's all, tell you.
Where did you get it? At a store or a bar? Where did you get
it? Yeah, a supermarket.
And where do you live?
I live in Brooklyn.
Awesome. It sounds like a find.
Okay, so how come I don't know about this? Where in Brooklyn do you live?
I live in Gravesend.
Oh, okay. And that's really fascinating because I don't know that beer.
You know what it sounds like, Ray? We you should come on the show. Just
bringing it by next Tuesday.
I'll tell you what. You come on.
Do you guys know who I am?
No.
No, we have no idea.
Carmen. You're Carmen.
I'm Carmen, Carmen from We Big Plant.
Oh! Our favorite host of the Plant Show on Heritage Radio Network.
Anyway, I thought I'd call in because I had a minute, and I don't drink a lot of beer, but this beer I really like.
You got to fix that.
I guess you're invited back on. Last year we had the coolest show ever. It was about hops, and Alice and Carmen from Weeding Plants were talking about hops. So thanks so much, Carmen. You're going to come in soon, and we'll talk about hops again, okay?
All right. Cool. Have a good show.
Thanks, okay. Carmen.
And then, she should stay on.
Yeah.
She's the best. Anyways, when cellaring beer, this is from L. Peters in Syracuse, New York. Another one of our great listeners from the whole Northeast region. Someone's supposed to say something like, yeah, right, come on. Yeah. But it's L. Peters from Syracuse, New York. And this is a question. It could be about vintage beer. It says, when cellaring beer, should I store it upright or on its side?
On its side.
Well, let our guest answer.
Okay. I don't know.
Go ahead.
Matt.
I mean, go ahead, Matt.
The theory of the side, apart from I've heard a larger bubble on top of the liquid surface.
And cork.
But the cork is the big concern there. So some beers aren't cork finished. I mean, two of the beers we had today were not. They were capped. Do you really need to serve that on its, or do you really need to store that on its side? I don't think so. And part of the consideration for a lot of these vintage beers is bottle conditioning. That means that there's residual yeast in there from the brewing process. It hasn't been filtered out when it's been placed in the bottle. So what you're looking to do is have all that yeast settle at the bottom. You look at a nice vintage beer or any beer that's been settling for a few weeks in a cool temperature, and you're going to see that ring of yeast along the bottom. That's not necessarily something you want to disturb when you pour the beer. Some people object to it. They say it doesn't really
belong there. So you're saying leave the beer standing up.
Yeah, leave the beer standing up. Let that yeast settle in there. Let the beer clarify a little bit. And
but you got to check out what kind of closing it has on it. Whether it's a, you know, if it's a cork, it's got to go on its side.
Well, you should.
A lot of beers are finished with a cork.
They are, and I think if you have the right storage environment, then your cork is not going to be as much of a problem. And also, you're not storing a beer for 20, 30 years the same way you're storing a bottle of wine.
Yeah, but you know, I just got to say, like, a year can fuck up a cork.
It can, yeah.
You got to say.
You guys
are doing this. Every beer they brought has been from 2007. What are some of the other gems in your vintage room that we should know about? Because we're going to New Haven soon. I'm at least going in the next few weeks.
When we finally broke down Christian's walls and he let Matt and I get in those full cover-up suits and scrub the walls in the basement at the Ginger Man in Norwalk, and build this vintage cellar.
Call OSHA.
We just started buying. What's that?
Call OSHA.
Call OSHA. We just started buying all those. There was actually a couple of beers, Pennachuck from New Hampshire, that's no longer in production. Mm. It's just this. We bought this bottle and we said, you know what? This just seems like it's a right fit before we even knew. We just put it away. A year later, Asimov and Times wrote an article featuring this beer and some other ones that were prime for aging. And we guessed right, and we just started buying up a bunch of those beers that we thought that were big enough, solid enough, thick enough, strong enough to rest. And then once Christian let the cat out of the bag about New Haven happening, I just kind of spent all of his money for the next 8 months buying more beer. So when we opened up New Haven, we just had this allotment of big, wow, burly Dogfish Head beers, those crazy off-center ones, a couple of barrels from New England, a couple things from Weyerbacher that are really, again, high in alcohol and things that just kind of will mellow out and kind of cool off a little bit over.
You had a vintage beer collection.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we opened up with a
big
collection.
Are you guys planning a vintage beer tasting anytime soon?
Not anytime soon.
For the public or?
Well, something.
You guys want to come? I mean.
Well, we'll come. But
we could do that.
Maybe we should do that. Maybe we should come up one day in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
I'm thinking remote broadcast, Jimmy. What do you think?
I don't know about that.
San Diego's more fun, probably.
I don't know if the technology is up to that. But
If you guys had a bar on a Caribbean island and we wanted to do it a vintage beer tasting.
How's South Norwalk Harbor?
In January, we can.
No, but we could definitely come up. Separate from us, talk about our listeners and the normal people in the world. There's love beer. Someone, can they go? Is there something coming up at the Cash Republic that people should check out? Special tastings, beer dinners, anything?
In the next 3 to 6 months, we're going to start getting on a regular schedule of beer dinners. And we've been doing this for 3+ years in Norwalk, where we feature 5 beers from a chosen brewery. The managers, owner, and chefs will sit down and pair those 5 beers with a 5-course meal, light appetizer, salad, entree, cheese course, and dessert. And the owners or brewmasters or guests from the brewery will come and talk about those beers, and we'll talk about how they pair with the food.
So possibly you could have a vintage beer dinner or vintage beers as part.
Boy, you know what? The longer we go on with this and building our vintage collection, yes. We don't want to pinch the selection too tight.
There's nobody doing vintage beers like that anywhere near
New York. We all know
vintage
beers
will
take their time.
Because with the cellar developing over time, we are getting, I'd say within the next year or two, we're going to get into a position where we're going to be able to do vertical tastings.
That's fantastic. They're always fun to see how.
I mean, there's no one in New York doing anything like that, as far as I know. So that's really unbelievable and amazing. We're gonna, I guess it's that
unbelievable
time
and amazing,
unbelievable and amazing.
Jimmy, is it awesome too?
So we'll give us some shout out to our Good Beer Seal Bar friends in New York City. Wednesday, June 1st is the kickoff night for Blind Tiger's Ale House's Style Series. The style of the month for June is IPA, and the list for the kickoff includes Hill Farmstead, McKellar Green Gold, Nebraska IPA, and more. Wow. Thursday, June 2nd is New York Beer Night at Barcade. And coming up June 14th, if you want to check out the Good Beer Seal Awards, it's at Barcade in Brooklyn, June 14th. All listeners are invited. It's going to be an awesome party. You'll find out which bars in New York City are now part of the Good Beer Seal.
So that event's open to the public. That's great.
Yeah, public can come. They're going to have to buy their beers, but it's going to be a fun night. There'll be over 20 bar owners there from New York City, some beer press, and interesting food and other things.
I think beer tastes better when you buy it yourself.
Yeah, I like that too. But I kind of like
when Christian
buys it. When the guys from Cash Republic bring me the vintage beers. I like that. So thanks to our sponsors, greatbrewers.com, goodbeerseal.com, and thanks to Ray, Christian, Matt, and Andrew for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Bree O'Connor. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Should help me explain, as a matter of fact, I like beer.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. This little nugget comes from Food Safety News, which is a blog that you can get every single day if you want to sign up for it. I love it. And in this one, it says, in what qualifies as ground-shifting news in the food safety world, the U.S. Department of Agriculture on Tuesday lopped 15 degrees off of its recommended temperature for safely cooking whole cuts of pork, aligning it with guidelines already in place for beef, veal, and lamb. Heating steak, roasts, and chops to an internal temperature of 145 degrees Fahrenheit, so long as the meat sits briefly before it's eaten, is enough to ensure its safety, the USDA said. This latest revision for pork comes again on the advice of the FSIS, which is the Food Safety Inspection Service, which says cooking cuts of pork to 145 degree Fahrenheit with a 3-minute rest is as safe as cooking them to 160 degrees, the previously recommended temperature with no rest time. So now you can have a little bit of pink, juicy pork, even if you're buying commodity pork, which should vastly improve its taste and eating quality. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Nicole Taylor is always the first to talk with new and exciting personalities in the food world on her show, Hot Grease. Check out a little clip.
Everything is super sweet in the Heritage Radio Network studios today. We're chatting with Fanny Gearson. Fanny is a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America and the 2011 James Beard Foundation Cookbook Award nominee. Oh my God, we fry in Bed-Stuy. We have to talk dough. Donuts. I'm going to have to say, Fanny, I don't know if you know this. I was definitely the first person in Brooklyn to start talking about it, though. Did you know that?
I knew that last time I saw you.
Ah.
But I didn't know that before.
So we have to talk dough. I mean, it is a bona fide phenomenon in Brooklyn.
I'm so excited to be part of it. I can't believe it. You know?
I mean, I was just telling you before the show that I think about a month ago, I went to dough on a Sunday at 2 o'clock and all the donuts
You like
were
what
gone.
You hear? You can hear Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. live on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast or check it out in our archives.